Good afternoon, everybody. We are now on the record, and let the record show that it is shortly after 1 p.m. on March 30th, 2015. We are present at the Community Center in Crosby, North Dakota, for the public hearing in the matter of the application of MetalArc Midstream Company, LLC, for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 46-mile, 10-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Divide and Burke counties. This is case number PU-14-823. My name is Wade Mann, and I am the procedural administrative law judge designated to preside over this hearing. And at this time, I will take appearances for the record, beginning with the applicant.
Thank you, Your Honor. John Morrison, P.O. Box 2798, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing for the applicant, MetalArc Midstream Company, LLC.
And PSC advisory staff.
Zachary Pelham on behalf of the Public Service Commission, Assistant Attorney General, Special Assistant Attorney General. With me is Public Utilities Analyst Julie Prescott. Ms. Prescott may have some questions, if that's okay with you, Mr. Mann.
Sure. Any objection to Ms. Prescott directly questioning witnesses?
No objection.
Okay. And also present are Commissioner Julie Fedorchik and Commissioner Randy Christman. I will call on the commissioners shortly for opening comments after we address the procedure for today's hearing. The issues with respect to the certificate of site corridor compatibility and route permit are as follows. There's three issues. Number one, will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Number two, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and efficient use of resources? And number three, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? Just briefly address the procedure for the hearing. MetalArc will go ahead and present its case first. It will call all of its witnesses, offer any exhibits into the record that it wishes to have admitted. Any of the witnesses that are called by MetalArc are subject to cross-examination by advisory staff and the commissioners. Once MetalArc has completed its portion of its case, any members of the public who wish to come forward and offer testimony to the commission may do so. I'll just have everybody come up one at a time to the table. You will need to be sworn in just like the witnesses for the company, and you will be subject to questions from the attorneys and the commissioners. No decision will be reached on the matter today. The proceeding is being recorded and will be available for later review. I serve as the procedural administrative law judge in this case, and that means it's the commissioners are the ones who make the ultimate determination with respect to whether or not to approve the application for the certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit. Are there any questions with respect to procedure before we get started, Mr. Morrison?
No questions, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Pelham, anything?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchik?
Yeah, good afternoon. It's great to be here. Many apologies for the delayed time start this morning. I'm glad that the public members who are here got the notice, and at least if you showed up this morning, hopefully saw the time change. We had to make some last minute travel changes and plans for how to get here. And so that put us behind by a couple hours, but we wanted to make sure to move forward with the hearing as planned today. And so we're glad to be here in Crosby and to be here at a public hearing with actually an audience of folks who are here to listen. And if you choose to, when it comes time for public input, to make some comments. This is our eighth hearing this month, and so we've been on the road a lot in North Dakota, coming to communities like yours to visit with folks and hear, you know, community members' ideas about the projects that we're considering for permits and construction permits, and also to hear the company's plans. You'll hear all of that today. They'll go through their case, and then we'll have an opportunity for public comment as well. I'm originally from Williston, but I've never been in Crosby. This is my first time actually in Crosby, and my most recent interaction or thoughts from your community come from having read the book 15 Months of Winter. I don't know if that's familiar to any of you, but see some nods, and I really enjoyed it, and I am a Norwegian descent, so I appreciated sort of the heritage of the folks from this community because it's very similar to mine, and I thought that it was a delightful portrayal of North Dakota character and your community as well, so thank you for that little piece of culture that's been added to our state's literary circles as well. So look forward to a really good hearing here today. Commissioner Brian Kulk is not with us. Late last week, he got invited by the FERC, that's the Federal Energy Regulatory Council. He was invited to go to a workshop that they're having in St. Louis and to speak on behalf of North Dakota and some of the impacts that the EPA's proposed rules on carbon dioxide would have on North Dakota. It was a really great invitation, important for our state, and so he had to choose whether to accept that invitation and take that opportunity to be able to have an audience with the FERC or with the downside being he'd potentially miss this hearing. He wasn't able to arrange his flights to attend both, but he will be able to. Everything is being recorded, and he will be able to go through the entire record, and I'm sure he will listen to the whole hearing and have all of your information as part of his background when he makes his decision as well. So I just wanted to make those comments. He regrets he can't be here, but he's doing really important work on behalf of North Dakota as well. So with that, I think I'll pass it on to my colleague, Randy, and look forward to a very productive hearing.
Commissioner Christman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Julie mentioned that this is our eighth hearing this month, and let me assure you, this we've not been 4 hours late starting on any of the others, or even three or two or one, so we don't make a habit of this. But I think it does bring out a point that is important, and that is, the simple thing for us to do would be to have the hearing in Bismarck, where we're all located, and the company has legal representation there, and we could have the hearing and be done with it. But the three commissioners on the commission really feel that it's important, the public aspect of the Public Service Commission, and we want to get out, make sure it's as convenient as possible for the people who are living out in the area where something's going to be constructed to have your say. And so that's why we choose to make these efforts and come out and get out here where it's more convenient for you, if you can call us, being 4 hours late, still convenient. To add to that, though, if you're here and wanting to testify, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, and I just want to explain the process that we go through. We're going to hear from the company first, and before I was on the commission and used to go to some government things, I always thought it seemed kind of backwards and almost rude to call a public meeting and then make the public sit there for hours when we maybe have cows calving or equipment that we should be getting ready for the field and that sort of thing, and then let the company go first while you wait. But the point of that is, what you would testify to if you went first is what you have heard the project entails, and these projects are always evolving and changing. So it's important to let the company get on the record with what their actual proposal is and then open it up so the public can respond to the actual proposal as it's being laid on the table before us. So that's why we do it in that order. We get better information and better testimony. So if you can continue to bear with us for a while, we'll hear the company's case. And we do certainly encourage public testimony. That's why we come out here. Our goal is not to necessarily approve something or change something or disapprove of it. Our goal is to make the best decision possible, and we're able to make the best decision possible when we get the most information possible. So we do look forward to hearing from you if you have thoughts or ideas on this case. And we'll get to that right as soon as the company's done making their presentation. Thank you all for being here and for your patience.
Mr. Morrison, do you have an opening statement?
Just very briefly, Your Honor, thank you for the opportunity to be here. This is a hearing relating to a request by Metalark to construct a pipeline running from a pump station here in Divide County to a transload rail facility in Burke County. We're going to have two witnesses testify today. John Millar, a vice president with Metalark, will testify as to the nature of the project, the design of the pipeline. And then Mr. Bill McCarthy will testify as to the environmental review that went into this process. We do anticipate offering five exhibits, and I don't think Mr. Pelham has any objection, so we would like to offer the exhibits now and have them received. I think all the commissioners have copies of them as the staff. They are Exhibit 1 is the application. Exhibit 2 is the standard certification relating to order provisions, and that's been signed by John Millar. We have not filed the original. I have the original of that in my file, and we will file that with the commission, but everybody has copies. Exhibit 3 is just a late received response from North Dakota Parks and Rec Department relating to the project, and nothing substantive. It's just a response that we did receive. We want to make the record complete that way. Exhibit 4 came up at the last hearing we did, and it's just a repeat of that. It is a redacted version of the application. The application that we submitted includes all of the cultural survey, and SHPO has requested that we substitute a redacted version of the application on the commission's website that deletes the specifics of the cultural resources and specifically the location of any cultural resources. They understand the documents are filed with the Public Service Commission and public records. They just are uncomfortable with it being on the website. So in accordance with their request, we are submitting a disc that has that redacted application on it. And finally, Exhibit 5 is a copy of the utility occupancy license for the railroad crossing for the pipeline. And Mr. Pelham requested we put that in. It was a request at the last hearing, which also had a railroad crossing. So just to make the record complete, we've done that. If Mr. Pelham agrees, we would offer those five exhibits at this time.
Does everybody have copies of the exhibits? Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Pelham, any objection to admitting Exhibits 1 through 5 up front?
No objection. I just add to Mr. Morrison's summary. There, the tree and shrub mitigation specifications is enclosed as part of Exhibit 2 as well. No objections.
Okay. Exhibits 1 through 5 are admitted. Mr. Morrison, are we ready for the first witness?
We are. Mr. Millar.
Okay. Mr. Millar, before you testify, I'm required to give you an oath. I need to advise you of the penalty for perjury in North Dakota. It is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. In being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Morrison.
John, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is John Millar.
And can you tell us by whom you're employed and what capacity?
I'm employed with Summit Midstream Partners. I'm vice president of engineering and asset management, and I work in our Houston office, which is in the Woodlands, actually.
And Metalark is an affiliate of Summit Midstream, is that correct?
It is the parent company of, I'm sorry, Summit is the parent company of Metalark.
Thank you. And you're an engineer by background, is that what you said?
I am.
And you previously testified for the Public Service Commission?
I have.
And are you familiar with the project that we're discussing today?
I am.
And have you reviewed the application?
I have.
I'm going to ask you to turn to the overall plat, which is the first page in Appendix B to the application. And using that plat, can you just describe generally the project that you're requesting approval for in this matter?
Yes. Okay, so like Mr. Morrison summarized in his opening statements, this is a 46-mile long, 10-inch pipeline that we proposed to build. None of it is built now. It's an exciting project for us. It's one that it's supported by a contract that we executed last summer with a company called Global Partners, LP. And Global is a company based on the East Coast, and they're primarily in the business of logistics of refined products and that kind of thing. So they have a lot of customers on the East Coast. And they're also involved in rail movements of Bakken crude to East Coast refiners. And so they have a rail loading facility in Burke County near the town of Columbus. And they receive most of the crude oil there by trucks. I think at one point they told me they were moving 40 or 50,000 barrels a day of barrels by truck into that facility, a lot of it from Divide County. And so we started talking to them last year about maybe building this pipeline. And so the agreement was consummated in June, and we made our announcement in June. And so we put this application together and got it in last year. So we appreciate you looking at it. So it's 10-inch pipeline. There's going to be one pump station. We're building it right now. It's in Divide County here. And then it's going, that one pump facility will get the oil all the way over to the rail facility in Burke County, a length of about 46 miles. And then we've got block valves at each end, and then we've got some intermediate block valves planned as well.
And how many intermediate block valves are there?
There's six.
Six intermediate ones?
Yeah.
Okay. And those are spaced according to PHMSA requirements, is that correct?
Generally speaking, there's not really a precise requirement for spacing valves, but it follows the PHMSA guideline.
Mm-hmm. And are you also constructing a tank at the, or will you be constructing a tank at the endpoint or at the transload
facility?
At
the origin, we will be installing another tank there, yes.
And what size tank will that be?
That'll be a 55,000 barrel capacity tank, 40 feet tall, and 150 feet in diameter.
And that facility is already permitted, is that correct?
It is.
And then you're also going to be installing a 400 barrel tank at the endpoint at the basin transload facility?
Right, that's just going to be a pressure relief tank.
Okay, and that'll be installed.
That's the one you meant, isn't it?
That's the one I meant.
Okay.
Maybe we should back up a minute. The Divide pump station, has a portion of that already been approved in connection with another project?
It has, and we have all the permits for the equipment that we're installing there.
And can you tell us what that project is? Is that the Divide lateral?
That was the Divide lateral that we did earlier this year.
Okay.
Or last year, I guess it was, September.
And so the 55,000 barrel tank that you were talking about, that was part of that Divide lateral project.
It is but correct? That it's being expanded now.
Okay. And I believe there's something we need to correct in the application. The application indicates that these intermediate block valves are basically automatic or automatic valves. Can you correct that for the record, please?
Yeah, the intent is for the valves at the origin and the destination to be automatic. That is, they can be remotely opened and closed by our control center in Houston. The intermediate valves were not intended to be motor operated because there's no power at those locations.
And there's simply no way to, or you don't have power out at those locations with the ability to automatically operate them. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the intent was to have them manually operated, but we have people stationed in Divide County who can get out to those valves very quickly if we need to.
And do you recall what the maximum operating pressure is on the line and what your anticipated normal operating pressure is?
The line is designed to be an ANSI 600-pound rated system, which means it'll have a maximum operating pressure of 1,480 PSI. But the anticipated operating pressure will be below 500 again.
And can you give the commission an estimate of what the daily volume will likely be on the line?
I expect it to be 20 to 25,000 barrels per day initially. And if their business picks up, we can go up to 50.
And you said the valves can be operated remotely from the Woodland, is that correct?
At the origin and destination points, they can be, yes.
And will the pipeline be monitored from your operating center in Woodlands?
It will.
And is there something called SCADA on the line?
Yes, we have a control center that uses a SCADA system to poll pressures and flow rates and temperatures and tank levels and put them on a screen for a pipeline controller to monitor.
And is that monitored on a 24/7 basis?
It is.
Can you give us a brief description of the installation process? In other words, how you're going to clear the right-of-way and dig the ditch or the trench and install the pipeline?
Yeah, this pipeline will be built like most of them are. There's a clearing function where we'll stake the center of the right-of-way with surveyors. There'll be some preliminary clearing. There'll be some gates cut in fences, if there are any. Then the pipe will be strung. It'll be welded. Then we'll ditch. There's a whole lot of spots here where we'll be doing direction boring underneath wetlands and road crossings and things like that. The pipe will be inspected before it's lowered into the ditch using what we call a Jeep, and which checks the coating for holidays. If there are any, they get repaired. Once it's approved to be lowered in, the pipe's lowered in, and then the backfill is placed such that there's no rocks or any other things that could damage the coating. That's put on the pipe, and then the topsoil is placed on top. And of course, all the welds are inspected. We also have a surveyor crew come by after the pipe's lowered into the ditch, and they'll shoot every weld and any other features on the pipeline, and that goes into our as-built drawings, which are digitally downloaded into our database in Houston, as well as we use them to produce actual hard drawings of the pipeline.
And sir, did you sign the certification relating to order provisions that we marked as Exhibit 2 in this matter?
I did.
And you're authorized to bind the company by signing that document, is that correct?
I am.
And the company does commit to constructing in accordance with that?
Yeah, I failed to mention all the things there, but yes, there's a migratory bird survey that we'll do, and we'll make sure that the depth of cover is as prescribed.
And has all of the right-of-way for necessary for the line been acquired?
I believe it has, yes.
And do you recall the estimated cost of the pipeline? I believe the application says $33 million.
Yeah, the total cost estimate is $33 million.
And can you describe for the commission what the timing is on getting the line installed? In other words, when would you like to install the line, if you could?
Well, we have bought the pipe and had it shipped up to Williston, so it's ready. We have a bid package out. We expect to award the construction contract in April. So we could get started May 1, I guess, to answer your question. And it would probably take most of the year to get it finished and commissioned.
Do you need to begin construction by sometime in May in order to get construction completed by the end of the year?
Yes.
Does Metalark also have an emergency response plan that it's prepared and has provided to local officials?
It does, and has been. It primarily consists of a OSRO contract firm that does initial response, but we also have emergency response trailer that we'll keep in Divide Station with cleanup equipment and containment equipment in it.
And will you have personnel local or local personnel in Divide County?
We do. We have two people now. We're going to add another person for Divide.
And do those people work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
No, they work shifts.
Are they on call so that you do have coverage 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
They are.
And with that, I don't believe I have any further questions this time.
Mr. Pelham?
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Good afternoon, rather, Mr. Millar. I have some questions for you. I'm just wondering if you can take us through the considerations given to landowners as far as the route that was determined by your company?
Consideration?
Mm-hmm. As far as what went into it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we do have our land man here, but I can describe the process generally. So we have a land department. On a project like this, we would contract land right-of-way people to go out and actually make contact with the landowner. And so we would we first ask for survey permission, and then we'll propose a route across their property, and then we'll begin a dialogue of trying to get an easement secured from them, and that's when we negotiate.
So on this project here, I understand you have all the right-of-way easements, so that's correct?
It yep. is correct.
Okay. And as far as considerations given to landowners, a landowner comes up to the right-of-way agent and says, hey, you know, I'm not too excited about placing this line through this area of my property. What's the response of your company to that?
We try and compromise, either move the pipe to an acceptable spot on the property, or we reroute around that property. And usually that negotiation is done with the landowner mm-hmm. as opposed to the tenant.
Sure. And assuming you have all the right-of-way easements in place, all of those issues have been resolved. Is that fair to say?
I am told that they have been.
Okay.
Yes.
And to be clear, I'm asking just what you know. I mean, I obviously okay. want you to respond. If you don't know and there's someone else appropriate to answer that question, you know, feel free to state that.
Thank you.
As far as the permitting goes, Health Department, North Dakota Department of Health requires certain permits. Have those permits been obtained by your company?
I don't know specifically. I'm told they have been, but
okay.
I don't know for
All
sure.
right. As far as zoning requirements, local zoning requirements of the county, do you know about that at all?
We had to get a zoning permit for our divide station, but that's not part of this application. There may be a permit that's needed at the basin transload facility for our little relief tank, and I think we're in the process of getting that.
And no permits required for the actual pipeline itself, is that fair to say, other than obviously what
railroad
you just
crossing
said.
Permits, road permits, landowners.
Nothing on the township level, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge.
You talked about the block valves and automatic block valves at the end point and the initial point. The manual shut down block valves. You indicated that someone could get there very quickly. What's very quickly?
Our guys live in Crosby. So I'd say the one right south of Crosby they could get to in about 15 minutes. But, it's just a matter of getting out in the roads. Depends on the weather. But they'll know where all these valves are. We'll be inspecting them on a regular basis. They'll be marked. There'll be a little fence around them. And they'll be above ground, of course. So they'll be accessible. I'm not sure where we're going to put the additional personnel. We might have one over by Columbus, although we'll work with Basin to maybe get better coverage on that end of the line.
When you say they'll be out inspecting, could you take us through what they're doing specifically when they're out inspecting this line?
Well, first of all, PHMSA has a requirement to inspect all block valves annually, or twice a year, I think. So that's something that we'll have to do and document. But then we'll also have the pipeline will be patrolled by aerial patrol every other week, and then we'll also patrol by foot patrol or vehicle on the weeks that there's no aerial patrol.
One of the concerns, I suppose, that has been brought up maybe recently is with your company involving a gathering line near here and a spill involving that line. What can you tell us that your company has gained as far as preventing such an event, and as far as training that has perhaps been reworked, what has been done since?
Okay, that incident involved a gathering system that had over 25 or 30 pumps and meters, tied to it, and it was made out of a non-metallic material called fiber spar, and it's design rating was 750 pounds, but we operated at 500 pounds. And this is a steel pipeline. It'll have one origin and one destination. And one thing that we've done a lot of work on since the spill is using our SCADA system for line balancing by using meters at each end. Now, in a gathering system, that's a big challenge when you got 25 in and one out. But this will be one in, one out. Line will be packed all the time, and our SCADA system will be able to I think very accurately detect if there's an imbalance, volume imbalance. So line balancing is something we've learned to do better. And we're experimenting with gathering systems right now how to get better performance out of this a very transient gathering system, flow-wise and pressure-wise. It's normal operating conditions cover a wide range, whereas here it's going to be pretty standard. We'll be able to speed up and slow down pumps at this station a little bit, so we might pump 800 barrels an hour for a while, or we might have to go up to 1,200, but it's going to be a tight band instead of on a gathering system where if you have one pump on, it's only doing 60 barrels an hour, but if 20 of them on, it's doing quite a bit more than that. So this system will be a lot easier to remotely manage in that regard.
And you mentioned that the local agencies, emergency response agencies, have been provided with a emergency response plan. I'm wondering Have they just been provided with the plan, or has anyone with your company discussed potential responses or even potential drills that have went into place?
I don't know the answer to that question. But if it hasn't been, I bet it's being planned.
So there's 8 total block valves on this line, is that correct? Including the start and end point?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you testify at all, sir, about the reclamation aspects that your company plans for this particular project, or is that better suited by someone else?
It's probably better suited by someone else.
I understand. But any issues? I know we talked about the right-of-ways, and those have all been obtained. The placement of the above-ground facilities on this proposed pipeline route, how has the discussion with above-ground facilities gone with landowners on this proposed line?
I'm not aware of any dissatisfied landowners. I mean, typically, if we do need surface facilities on a landowner's property, we pay, we negotiate another payment for that.
And I understand that there were some waivers that were obtained because parts of this pipeline, proposed pipeline, are going to be within 500 feet of a business or a residence. Mm-hmm. Is that your forte, or is that perhaps better asked of the subsequent witnesses?
I was not involved in getting those waivers, but I know we got a few of them, and there might be one outstanding.
I see. So there may be one outstanding. What can you tell us about the one that may be outstanding?
It's over by the Divide Pump Station, just on the west side of Highway 85. And we got a waiver from that person on the last application that we did, but we didn't on this one. And so technically, this pipeline originates in that station, so it's within 500 feet of this guy. And we probably need to go back and ask for a waiver on that.
Okay. Have you had discussions with this person?
Not to my knowledge.
Is it an individual or is it a business? Do you know?
I do not know.
I see. But it sounds to me your testimony is that there is a plan to go and get that waiver from that individual or business, I suppose. I was going to ask you a little bit, and I think that maybe your environmental specialist would probably be better asked, but what can you tell us at all, if anything, about the abandoned mines, coal mines that are around the proposed route?
I think we passed close enough to one of them that the soil was in question, and we did a soil survey to see if it was stable enough to support, a pipeline through it, and we determined that it was. Mm-hmm. But that's all I know at this point of that.
And I understand that your company had some correspondence with the Reclamation Division of the PSC. Is that correct?
I believe so, but I wasn't party to that.
I understand. It's mentioned in the application that there's an intent to co-locate with other utilities. Can you tell us anything about co-location on this proposed project?
I think the intent was to say that we're trying to at least keep within proximity. I don't think we're sharing right away with any other pipelines, but okay, at least trying to be in the same general corridor.
General area, so you don't have one pipeline, and then your existing pipeline or existing whatever utility buried underground so as to alleviate concerns that landowners may have of various underground facilities within their property?
Correct, at least trying to keep it all in one spot that they can manage.
Mr. Miller, I don't have any other questions for you at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Prescott?
Yes, Your Honor. You testified that this pipeline is monitored by the Woodlands, Texas Control Center. How many other pipelines is that center monitoring at the same time?
All the ones that we own and operate.
In North Dakota, for instance.
Oh, in North Dakota? Let's see. This would be added to our oil gathering system in Burke and, I'm sorry, in divide in Williams counties. Then we have a gas gathering system in Burke and Montreal County.
How many other states are you in?
Ohio, West Virginia, Texas, and Colorado, and parts of Utah.
And that center monitors all of those.
Mm-hmm.
How about your local people at Crosby that would be monitoring this? Are they? Is this their only pipeline, or are they monitoring the others?
They have the others,
well?
Too, yes. We have a team of, I think there's 20 guys now doing the oil and water system, and they're stationed in Epping. And then we have another crew over in Stanley that does our monitoring and operation of our gas system. And I think they have about 16 people over there.
I just briefly checked the 10-year plan. I didn't notice any other development, future development plan. Do you have anything else planned?
Yeah, I don't even think this was in our 10-year plan because at the time we were still negotiating this contract. But no, this is the last project on our books. We had some expansion projects with current customers for 2015, but they've since cut those way back. And so we're not doing much expansion other than this.
No further questions, Your Honor?
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Millar. A few questions, and I'll have you back up just a little bit. Tell me about your company and your operations just in general.
In general, okay.
Well, where you're located, what your focus is, that type of thing.
Okay, sure will. So we are headquartered in Houston. We have two relatively large offices in Denver, and one in Denver and one in Atlanta. We started out primarily as gas gathering and compression. Our first asset was in the Barnett Shale in Arlington, Texas. That system is about a 350 million cubic feet a day gas gathering system. We since bought systems on the western slope of Colorado, and then we got up into North Dakota with an acquisition in that closed in February of 2013. Since that one, we then did a couple of large deals that got us into the Marcellus and the Utica.
Mostly gas gathering?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And mostly gathering?
Mostly
systems?
Gathering, yeah. Okay. We're building a pretty large system in the Utica right now that'll have a lot of compression on it, but most of it is gathering.
Okay. And how long have you been operating, like going back in Texas?
That system was bought in 2010.
Okay. So you're fairly new to the oil industry. You must be.
Our company, yeah, it was formed in 2009.
All right. And you've been in North Dakota since February of 2013.
That's correct.
And your first purchase here was, tell me again what that was.
It was a company called Bear Tracker Energy. They had built the gas system in Montreal County, and they were just starting on building the oil and water gathering system in Williams. So it was still a project when we got it, probably 30% complete at the time.
Okay.
Could I just add one clarification?
Of course.
The company consists of a lot of industry veterans who have come from companies that have been in business a long time. So, I mean, we've got a lot of experience building and operating the pipelines. We didn't all just start in 2009.
Sure. So it was with all the shale development, some industry folks with years of experience got together and started this.
That's
and looked
correct.
For opportunities throughout the different fields.
That's correct.
That's what it's sounding like. Okay.
Yeah.
is this your first construction project in North Dakota?
No.
New construction?
No.
Okay. It sounded like you purchased others. So what have you constructed?
Yeah, so the Divide Lateral, for instance, we built that in 2013. That was 43 miles, 8-inch pipe. The gathering system in Burke County up here, in Divide County, we built all that.
Okay.
So, I mean, we finished out a project that had been started in Williams County, but there was quite a bit more to do.
Okay, very good. And does the Divide Lateral, since you mentioned that, does that feed this line? Will they work together?
No, it'll be one of the delivery points out of this Divide Station. So oil that we're gathering into Divide Station can either be delivered through the Divide Lateral down to Colt Hub, or it can come through this lateral out to the Stampede Rail Facility.
I see.
So this divide station is the origin for both pipelines.
So what feeds the divide station where this line starts?
There's a gathering system north of divide station, and we gather from two different producers there. And then there's some trucks that'll come in to offload there.
And the divide station is yours. The basin transload facility is not yours.
That's correct.
So when the oil goes to the end point there, do you transfer ownership or do you store it? Do you have storage tanks of your own at that facility? When do you transfer over to the basin?
We'll have a meter at the other end that will be the custody transfer point in which we turn it over to the basin people to store it in their tanks.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your spill history here with the lines that you own in North Dakota, and then just your companies in general, spill history, to the extent that you can.
Okay. I don't know if I can give you a comprehensive report on how many, you know, barrels shipped or MMs of gas shipped without a leak, but we did have a saltwater spill that was mentioned earlier in my testimony. We've had some minor oil spills that we've reported I think the last one was a flange that for some reason had moved and it started dripping. Yeah, but we report everything.
Mm-hmm. Give me a sense of minor.
I want to say a barrel.
Okay.
We've had no spills of oil, on the right of way. All of it has been contained within our facility. Mm-hmm. Other than that drip. So, we're really focused on that right now, I can assure you, of preventing that and monitoring performance for our pipes.
In your facilities in other states, are they largely gas? Do you have very many other crude lines?
All of our crude lines are in North Dakota right now.
Okay.
This system.
I see.
Right.
Okay. You talked a bit about the trucks that will be the equivalency in terms of truck loads that would be required to carry the capacity of this line. Do you anticipate that there will actually be a result in decreased trucks on the road, or is there going to still be all the trucks plus you're going to put this crude in the pipeline? Will the people here see fewer trucks on the road as a result of this line?
I think immediately you'll see trucks instead of going from Divide County all the way to this facility, 46 mm-hmm. miles away, mm-hmm. they'll be coming into our facility. So there'll be, yes, short hauls from Divide County. The next step in evolution, though, would be for us to go out and build gathering to tie them in to this facility and then get those trucks off the road. We're working with these producers right now, but it's just that the volume isn't there really to support the pipe. So I think what you'll see is just shorter hauls
into the Divide pump station rather than all the way to the rail facility?
Correct.
Okay. You mentioned the capacity on the line. Is there capacity on this line more than what you've contracted for?
Yes.
Okay. Has the slowdown affected the economics of this project?
Our customer has not come back to, I guess, request relief. Technically, the answer is, yeah, there probably is. World crude prices of sweet crude has come down a little bit, so that's the alternative, right? So a Philadelphia refiner can either choose to buy a barrel here and pay $14 a barrel to have it railed to them, or they can buy a barrel from England, the Brent crude. And for much of the last 2 years, Brent crude has been way too expensive, and mm-hmm. Bakken crude was the choice. That margin's tightening right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that we're in jeopardy of not shipping any barrels to the East Coast from North Dakota, but I think that their choices are a little more better than they used to. They being the East Coast refiner, so it may have affected it a little bit.
But if you get the permit for this project, your plans are to construct. There's no kind of we're still waiting to see.
No, we have a contract.
Okay, all right. Let's see. There's, and maybe the next witness is better to testify, but you sound like more of the project guy that knows the details, so I'm going to ask you this. You talked a bit about how you put the pipe in, you know, the whole construction process from beginning to end and some of the welds. I've been around the country to hear about some of the latest and greatest technology that exists for tracking pipelines and for identifying problem spots, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Are you using any of those, say the RFID tags that actually come on the pipe so you can know exactly what is happening with each piece of the pipe along the way with your inspection process, with your kind of electronic inspections?
Are you talking about identifying every joint of pipe and an as-built? Yes, we do. So we kind of do it the old-fashioned way. I mean, we have surveyors out there, and they've got all digital equipment, and they will they'll get the heat and the run and the joint number and the coil number for every joint of pipe.
Okay. And you have talked about this a few different times, but I'd like more just kind of comprehensive walkthrough of your spill detection systems. Both you've got the aerial and the foot patrols, but also just, you know, your SCADA system and what exists within the pipeline for that, and your pigging plans.
Okay. Pigging is a good one. So let's just start with line balancing with our SCADA system. Okay. So the controller is 24/7. He's looking at how fast we're pumping out of the station, the tank levels, what the pressure is at the origin point of the pipeline, and then how much is coming out the other end of the pipeline and what the pressure is. So there's kind of a normal range he's looking for. Meanwhile, our SCADA system is counting, and it's going to do a one-hour balance and then a six-hour balance and a 12-hour balance and a 24-hour balance. And so what we're trying to do is get all those lines to merge to zero imbalance, okay? And so if the pipeline has transient conditions, the one-hour number is going to move around a lot, but as long as the others stay smooth, you know, we shouldn't have a problem, okay? But if all the lines start trending downward or if the 24-hour number starts going down, then we know, hey, there could be there's an imbalance here that hasn't been reconciled. Mm-hmm. And that's when we would shut down and we'd start calling people out, okay?
And so just before you go on, I want to just compare this to, say, your gathering system where there's all kinds of different lines coming in. This is just one line. So it's much, is that what you're saying? It's much easier
to detect. This would be really tight. All four lines will be right on zero all the time. Whereas on the gathering system, there's so much transients that it creates noise and you can't detect an abnormal situation quickly.
Okay.
But on this line, we will.
Okay, so that's the balancing. Walk through the rest of your pieces of spill detection.
Yeah, and then I said the aerial patrol and the foot patrol. Okay, that's just looking at the right-of-way, looking for anything that looks unusual, like that a slow leak could do something to the vegetation, erosion, or something like that. Or we also look for, is anybody encroaching on the pipeline? Somebody build something on top of us. You know, the aerial patrol ought to pick that up, but we got to pick that up too.
And then pigging.
So there's two kinds. There's maintenance pigging and inspection pigging. So maintenance pigging, what we'll do is, we'll determine, it's monthly, weekly, or daily. And this oil shouldn't be too full of paraffin or any other thing. So, you know, this could be a weekly thing where we launch a pig and we'll go down and pick it up at the other end. And then we'll take the sediment and paraffin and any other things that come out of that trap and we'll get a lab test to see, you know, do we need corrosion inhibitor or some other, you know, chemical to protect the inside of the pipe. Mm-hmm. And so that, and then every 5 years we have to do a inspection pig, which is a electromagnetic device that looks for metal anomalies.
Mm-hmm. Is there any circumstances whereby your company decides to run those more than every 5 years, the smart pigs? Mm-hmm. Or do you do that just because that's what the federal government requires and you're going to do the minimum requirement by the feds?
We'd probably start there. Now, if there was a problem area where we have a baseline and we want to track something, we might do it more frequently than 5 years, if the alternative is cut out a bunch of pipe. This is a brand new pipe. I don't expect that it's going to have any problems. In 5 years, that would be fine.
Okay. Tell me about the hydrostatic testing process.
Okay. A couple ways we can go about it. The one way we normally do it is have the construction contractor source the water, get the discharge permit, or otherwise figure out a suitable way to dispose of the water. So that's included in their bid. The hydrostatic test itself is a designed process where You know, an engineer will look at what is the desired test pressure, what are the elevation differences and the weight of the water and all that stuff, and figure out, okay, if I'm going to put my weight here where I'm actually reading the test, what am I actually testing the whole pipeline to? And that, after all that's designed, they'll submit the plan, we'll prove it, and then the test will be performed. And I think PHMSA requires 8-hour, probably do 12-hour on this one, if not a 24-hour test, because there's a lot of water here. And we want to make sure we got it right.
So you crank it up to its maximum operating pressure and keep it there for 12 to 24 hours?
The test pressure is actually 20% greater than the maximum operating pressure.
Okay. So how do you feel that that test pressure will mimic the actual pressure in this line?
It'll be way more than the actual pressure. I mean, I expect that we'll be operating at about 500 PSI discharge for the near term coming out of that station. So we're testing it to a class rating of ANSI 600. So all the flanges will be the big thick flanges that are ANSI 600 pound for all these valve settings where they're flanged, you know, so the pipe is strong enough for way more than you know, 2000 pound test pressure. So we're going to test it as if it were going to be operated at 1480.
Okay.
But we're really going to only be operating at about 500.
And will you, do you see a circumstance down the road where you'll increase that pressure? And what would be the maximum pressure you intend to operate this line at if you got a lot more, you know, prices went up and there's a lot more production?
I guess technically I'd have to say 1480 if we had that much demand for the pipe.
Okay.
For pushing oil through that pipeline. You know.
Have you calculated what that would, the capacity in terms of barrels per day would be at that?
I think pressure? It would be close to 60,000 barrels a day.
Okay.
I've contractually said 50 because I'm pretty confident we can do that without any issues. 60, you know, we'd be up there at 1,400 pounds.
Okay.
Now we have pressure relief. I might point out pressure relief at the destination and the origin point. So if the pumps for some reason tried to put more than, you know, our maximum operating pressure, we'd have a relief valve that would pop back to our tank.
On the the monitoring system, you described folks down in Texas monitoring this, but you also described some people up in North Dakota in various locations. So
right.
I was unclear who actually has the 24/7 monitoring of this system.
That's the pipeline controllers in Texas who are at the board at our control center watching this pipeline.
Okay.
And if they see something unusual, then they get on the phone and call one of these guys up here in Crosby. And they're probably out in the, you know, the gathering area. They could be driving this line already. They're doing something, or they're sleeping. But they'll get a call, and they got to get up and go look.
Okay, so they're the boots on the ground, the people watching 24/7 are in Texas. But they also, and we ask this at every single pipeline hearing, so we get a good, clear picture of how many people are actually monitoring the pipelines in our state. How many, the folks you have in Texas that are monitoring North Dakota lines, how many other pipelines are they watching? I mean, do you have like 5 people in a control center watching all of your stuff?
No.
Is it much larger than that? I'd like a better picture of that.
Okay. Right now we have 2 consoles that's manned 24/7. So theoretically, to man a 24/7 position, it takes 4 people, plus we hire a 5th. So each console has 5 people assigned to it. One of them is solely liquids. And so that they're going to be doing this system exclusively. They're not doing it now exclusively. So I think there's a couple other gas lines on their board, but we're shifting it all over, and we're going to add more consoles. So we've already got 4 physical consoles. And a console is a big desk. That's, you know, there's rules for consoles now, but you know, so they have, you know, a place to exercise, and you know, the table goes up and down, and there's 7 screens. And they can flip to screen. So if they got to monitor something closely, they might have a screen dedicated for that while they might be doing something else. And then, of course, we have alarms built in. So if a tank gets too high or if a pressure gets too high, or, you know, we design alarms to tell them, hey, look at me. And then we look and we see. And if he sees a problem, then, you know, they're told to shut down and call somebody out.
Okay. So that system that is focused on North Dakota, the people monitoring the North Dakota systems are just watching North Dakota and maybe a couple other. What else do they monitor?
They monitor the gas system over Mount Trail.
Yeah.
Okay. Which has 6 compressor stations on it. And really that's just alarms they're watching for. They're not actually physically turning on and off compressors.
Mm-hmm.
There might be one other system on that console.
Okay. And if you need to get that information, get back to us, that's fine. If you want to provide more specific explanation of that, I suspect it'll be something Commissioner Kalk will kind of look for in the record as well. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
Would the next witness be the best to talk about reclamation details?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I think that concludes my questions for you, Mr. Millar. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman?
I don't know if this is a reclamation detail or not, but I'll just get this one out of the way right away. Is the minimum burial depth 4 feet above the top of the pipe?
It is. We actually specify 5.
Okay.
But from time to time, it drifts a little below 5, which is why we specify 5. So we guarantee it's 4. So there's an initial topography survey done. Okay, and then we follow in after we bury the pipe. Then we shoot the pipe. Then we backfill it, and then we do another topography survey. And sometimes it is a little less than 5, but 5 is usually our spec and our construction specification.
There's 43 occupied residences or businesses within 500 feet, according to the application. Does that sound correct?
43 sounds high to me.
I got that from page 16. But so you said there's just the one remaining over at the origination facility.
Let me see if it's in the corridor versus the actual route.
Okay.
It's on page 16.
Location 4.4.
Yep, you're right. It says corridor. Sorry about that. So besides the one that you mentioned that has already signed a waiver for the previous project, but this is a continuation of that project, so you're going to try and execute another one.
We are.
All the other ones are these 8 or 10 or whatever it is that are included at the back. You have all your waivers accomplished other than that one.
I think there was one more that is not an occupied structure, but I think the next witness can be more definitive there. So I think there were 2 outstanding. One is not occupied. One is occupied. That's the one by Divide Station.
Okay. For permits, I don't know, I just interpreted your answers. I wasn't sure if you were sure. A lot of counties require a conditional use permit for pipelines. If I understood you right, you have the necessary permit for the facility in Divide County. You've applied for the permit for the facility in Burke County, and that's awaiting, correct?
Correct.
And are you saying that you don't need a conditional use permit for the pipeline itself in either of the counties?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay,
somebody else can testify.
That's always a condition of our permits, so we'll have to confirm that.
Okay.
Have you checked into what the property taxes are going to be on this pipeline?
No. I mean, we model it, when we study the feasibility of the project. I think we use 1.something%, but I don't know exactly what it's going to be.
Okay. And the last thing, that relief tank by Columbus, 400 barrels. Some of these pipeline projects we're talking 100,000 barrel facilities and such. Am I understanding this project right, that really the tankage that you need is there already?
Right.
But this is just an additional relief facility.
In the event that a valve closes unexpectedly, the pressure goes up, there'll be a valve that'll relieve a small amount of oil into this 400-barrel tank.
Okay. This
and then send
really
us a signal that says something's wrong, and boom, everything shuts down, and then we take the oil out, you know, by truck and send it to...
This isn't really a functional hold in
no,
a tank.
No, no. Okay.
I thought this sure seems like a small number.
Yeah.
What's... You don't own the receiving facility, correct?
We do not.
Refresh me on whose that is?
It is a joint venture between Basin Transload, who's the operator, and Global Partners, okay, who is the company that we did the contract with. They're the ones who are marketing the oil. Basin operates the facility.
And do you know what their storage capacity is on that site?
I think they've increased it to over 450,000 barrels of storage.
Okay. Other than wanting to follow up on those conditional use permits, that's all the questions I have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Morrison, any follow-up questions?
No follow-up questions.
Okay. Mr. Pelham?
No, sir.
Ms. Prescott?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak? Okay. I think you can step down.
Thank you.
And we'll take just a 5-minute break before we call the next witness.